Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Slowly but surely, legacy media support of the West war on Russia is changing. Ukraine is not winning and hardly likely to win in the end. Propaganda is at times powerful, but hard, cold facts eventually trump fables written by the elites, mediocre scribes. Crosstalking Ukraine and propaganda, I'm joined by my guest, Ryan Christian in Franklin. He is founder and editor of The Last American Vagabond and host of The Daily Wrap-Up. In Paris, we have Rachel Marsden. She is a syndicated columnist and RT contributor. And here in Moscow, we have Pepe Escobar. He is an independent geopolitical analyst and author specializing in Eurasia. All right, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. I want to go to Rachel first in Paris. I want to get everybody's take on the downing of a drone over the Black Sea and the reaction, both governments, Russian and American, to that fact, because it's very interesting that they've gotten to a certain threshold and then both have kind of moved back. Rachel, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we're looking at a PR battle for hearts and minds throughout this entire thing. And there's always a lot of talk of potential false flags. Could it escalate? Could it de-escalate the conflict? I think ultimately it's just going to keep following its course, and there's going to be these little incidents here or there. And nobody really, as you mentioned, Peter, has an interest in escalating anymore. But it does allow for each party to jockey for position, and that's ultimately what we're seeing with this incident as well.
Well, Ryan, I'm really glad that Rachel mentioned the word propaganda, because she's absolutely right, because this is what it has been most of the time coming from the West. So we have this downing of the drone, but at least thoughtful people in the West, and there are not many left, no one has said it's been shot down. It was downed, okay? I think that shows a little equivocation, like we're seeing in the Washington Post, like we're seeing in the New York Times. There's equivocation going on right now. Now, I don't know if that is part of a false flag itself. We can't tell. But there's certainly a shift going on. Ryan.
I definitely share her concern regarding the false flags, the topic in general, just in this entire sphere. Personally, I see this more as, and agreeing with the general topic, this is kind of jockeying for position or really just playing the PR game. Ultimately, I think that we play this game, we see this game back and forth, where the U.S. government seems to feel that they can operate in any field anywhere, just, you know, and just claim the international waters discussion. But if Russia does the same in any, even remotely in the same way in reverse, in any kind of area close to the, you know, Western hemisphere, it becomes some sort of act of war and framed that way. And so we just see this game, this PR game back and forth. And we've been reported or heard the reports about how this actually went down, about dumping the fuel and how they responded. And your point about downing, I think, is really important, that ultimately they want people to misinterpret how this went down, because then they can play that better for.
Okay, let's go to Pepe. Basically, Pepe, the same question to you, because, you know, what the Russians are basically saying is that don't send any more drones over the Black Sea. You know what's going to happen here. And I think that, you know, there's going to be these elements in the U.S. are going to say, yeah, if we send another one, we'll probably get harassed as well. I mean, this is a very clear signal without creating a major incident. Go ahead, Pepe.
Come on, this thing is going to go on forever. Now it's a false flag to the end of time. They're going to keep provoking. It's provocation, of course, and provocations in the Black Sea and provocations near Crimea. The MQ-9 Reaper was going. It's a major provocation. And according to my best intel information, it was downed by electronic warfare. The Russians are masters of electronic warfare. No, nobody's better than them in the world. So this is probably the real story. But nobody is interested in spinning the real story now. But for the Americans, in terms of loss of face, it's even worse than five idiots in a yacht with a bunch of explosives.
Okay, well, of course, Pepe's making reference to the Nord Stream, destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines here. But Rachel, I mean, again, you're the one that started out with this kind of, this is more of a propaganda war than anything else. Also, we keep hearing about talk of the new Ukrainian offensive. Do you think that this drone story plays into that? Is it to show, you know, how aggressive the Russians are and how much we have to help our Ukrainian friends? I mean, is there any connection here? Because, like I said, the pages in the mainstream media, they're beginning to doubt the administration. Go ahead, Rachel.
I don't know if these people are that intelligent or sophisticated, to tell you the truth. I mean, the best they could come up with was this, with this drone story, was that, you know, there was a Russian jet involved, and it basically whizzed fuel on this American drone and thereby harassing it. It's just kind of ridiculous. And the fact that we're even talking about this when, you know, every single time there's an incident involving international airspace and a Russian jet that gets a little too close to Alaska when, you know, Russia's right there, or anything like that, you know, Russian jet ends up close to Europe in international airspace, somehow it becomes a topic. And you kind of have to wonder why.
You know, you're absolutely right, because, you know, Ryan, it's interesting that we have this incident here, which plays to the advantage of all parties involved because of its interpretation. But we have inside the United States, with the presidential election coming up, and we had Tucker Carlson over at Fox News do a kind of a straw poll of Republicans that are running or may potentially run. And the verdict is in. Most Republican voters and most of the candidates that are in or could run are against this war. It's Biden's war, and you know, you can show the Russians they're as aggressive as you may be, but at the same time, there's no appetite, because this is an elite war. That's what it has been packaged as a package of propaganda. People are not interested in this conflict, Ryan.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I think that's been something we can see in the United States long before this war. I think this is an especially propagandized war, and I think it's been politicized to a degree that we haven't seen in a while. But ultimately, you look before this, you can see any poll from either left or right, and seeing that most Americans don't want more war of any kind. And it's always, that's why they have to package it politically and sell it to people. And that's why it ultimately became this larger concept about do it for the world or do it for freedom and take it on the chin because Putin's causing everything. And it's just irrational. I think, you know, understanding Americans don't want this, it paints the picture that we're not really represented by our government today.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, and Pepe, you're the one in the program that's already mentioned Crimea. And if we go back to the illegal transfer of power and the coup in 2014, that's what Victoria Nuland wanted. She wasn't interested in Kiev. She was interested in Crimea. And this is why we get all of this talk from the administration and NATO that at the very least, Crimea has to be demilitarized. That's very interesting. That has nothing to do with a political settlement. That's talking about a geopolitical settlement that the West is interested in. I thought it was very interesting. You know, it has to be demilitarized. They already see what they want to accomplish, which they won't. Go ahead, Pepe.
Peter, in fact, is much more serious, because this Ukrainian counteroffensive, if it happens, let's say around the end of April, May, or June, the objective is to cut off Crimea from.
Right.
Apart from very few Telegram military channels, Russian specialists, and some of them are really, really alarmed that this is a strong possibility. They're going to throw everything that NATO has against the Russian forces to cut off Crimea from Russia. So if this happens in terms of, once again, PR operation and propaganda war would be a massive win for the NATO stand space. So I hope the Ministry of Defense is seriously paying attention to it. And according to some very, very good military analysts and reporters on the ground, they are not so sure.
Well, Rachel, that's exactly the point. You know, you can get, when you get reporting from the ground, it is very, very much it diverts away from what we keep hearing from the Zelensky people, from NATO itself. I mean, even Stoltenberg says, you know, the Russians are winning in logistics. Well, that's what war is. It's logistics. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been spending some time recently, obviously in Europe, in Paris here, and in Germany recently, I covered some protests at the Ramstein NATO and US airbase where they launch drone operations, notably into Africa, for example. And protesters there were saying, look, I mean, what's going on in Ukraine is just light years away from the problems that we have at home. And yes, they feel badly for everybody involved in both countries who are impacted by all of this, but you know, who's actually thinking about the interests of Germans, the interests of French people? I mean, we have Macron right now, who, according to the Telegraph today or yesterday, was saying that you know, there's an issue with the EU wanting to band together and buy ammunition altogether and finance it. And there's a big fight right now because in the EU, because France and Macron want to have that production in France. So in other words, they want to kind of use it to bolster, use this conflict and the prolongation of the conflict to bolster their military industrial complex, like the US's, which doesn't really give them very much incentive to tamp things down or to head to the negotiating table when they're still kind of jockeying for position in order to get to get some kind of benefit out of all this. Meanwhile, you know, they're talking about increasing French defense production as a result of all this and having it funded by EU tax money, essentially. Meanwhile, French bakeries are struggling to keep the baguette alive. So they're light years away from the everyday concerns of the average European at this point.
Yeah, well, it's all about priorities and the average citizen. They're the lowest on the totem pole here. All right, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue more discussion on Ukraine and propaganda. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine and propaganda. Okay, let's go back to Ryan and Franklin. You know, in the larger picture of what's going on here, we're getting the outlines of what the West is trying to jockey for, or at least push Zelensky and his people to do, and basically have an offensive, retrieve as much, reoccupy as much land as you can, and then we'll sit down and talk. You know what the biggest problem with that, Ryan, is? What if the Russians don't want to talk?
Well, there's a lot of dynamics to that point. It really, as people often discuss, nobody wants to negotiate at the barrel of a gun. And that's how the U.S. very, as far as I can tell, kind of ubiquitously in everything they do foreign policy operate, where it's ultimately we demand something, and if you don't comply with that, nothing else is going to be discussed. We see that going on with Syria right now in regard to just rebuilding Syria. No, we won't even allow them to get their lives back until we get Assad out of power. That's how this tends to go. So nobody would expect Russia from this position to actually engage with a negotiation with somebody who's not negotiating honestly. But I do think that this is about driving this to a position that benefits the West, specifically the United States, at the expense of Ukraine. And I think everybody who's looking at this honestly can see that. And speaking of the people in regard to France or you know, where else we're discussing this dynamic, thinking Crimea, like think about the hypocrisy of arguing you're doing this for the people and then taking back a territory that voted to not be part of Ukraine for very obvious reasons. It's incredible.
It's really amazing that you bring that up because, you know, and they had referenda before 2014. People should be knowledgeable about that. I mean, ever since Ukraine became independent, they've been wanting to leave Ukraine, and they finally got their opportunity when there was a coup. Let me go back to Rachel here. You know, Rachel, you know, one of the fundamental themes that I've been pushing on this program ever since the conflict started is that we already know what the Russian position is on an ending to the conflict. They told the world on December 17th, 2021, about their security demands, okay? Those security demands have not changed, okay? So there's no reason to wonder what the Russian position is. The Russian position came before the conflict even started. Go ahead, Rachel.
Yeah, I think the big question is, what is the Western position? Because, for example, here in France, President Emmanuel Macron initially wanted negotiations, and now it's Ukraine has to win on the battlefield. That seems to be the line. Seems like all these Western countries are fighting with each other to see who can get closest to Zelensky. It's like they're playing a game of musical chairs, and they don't want the music stop to stop right now. But when it eventually does and all this is over, they're all going to fight to be the guy who's not on a chair, but is on Zelensky's lap as he sits in the chair. They want to be that guy. So they're buying time so that they can all jockey with one another until to see who can get the best outcome when all this is over. That seems to be what it's about. But what's really interesting as well is in terms of being able to trust the West when it comes to negotiations, that's pretty complicated. I mean, just look recently at the Black Sea grain deal, which was everybody was up in arms about the fact that grain couldn't get out of Ukraine to poor countries. Well, look what's happening to it. I mean, Turkish President Erdogan, he said that 44% of that grain right now is going to Europe. Yep. The top three countries that are getting it, about 46% of it is going to China, Turkey, which are obviously portals to Africa and Asia. But it's also going to Spain, and it's being used to feed livestock. I mean, Spain makes enough grain or has enough grain for itself, more than enough grain for itself, so it doesn't need it to feed its people. But it's being used to fatten up pigs so that Europe can benefit from that commercially. So, I mean, all this talk about, oh, we need to get food out of the region and poor Russia or Russia's blocking this effort. I mean, ultimately, at this point, it has nothing to do with what they initially said. I mean, it's like taking up a food bank and ultimately going home and shoving it all in your fridge.
But see, right? Rachel is absolutely 100% right here. Okay, and you know, in the way that, and I go back to Ryan here. Ryan, they never anticipated any of these things here. Oh, the sanctions, Russia will be crushed. The war will be over. There'll be regime change in Russia. You know, they have such a simplistic view of it all. But when it started getting tough, the sanctions boomeranged on Europe and on the world when we were talking about food security and whatnot. And then on the military front, NATO is never designed to fight a war like this, not to appear, okay, not appear conventional power like Russia. I mean, on every single stage, every single step, nobody in the West thought this through clearly. Go ahead, Ryan.
I would agree that it's clumsy, and I think that's just kind of a common theme with a lot of the foreign policy today. But I would at least put forward the possibility that they did think this would happen, that the argument, I mean, really taking a step back to understand what sanctions are even written down in their own documentation, what they're intended to do is drive people to a point of desperation to where they accept whatever the solution is. We see this with foreign, you know, policy all over the place. Right now, I argue Americans are under the same focus of U.S. foreign policy kind of concept where we're being driven to a point of desperation. But so the idea being that they expected Europe to be in this position, because ultimately we see this being you could even draw overlap to the Great Reset kind of direction for a lot of things, but that's a different conversation. The point is, I think they knew a Nord Stream attack and so on would put Europe in a point of desperation to make them more rely on the United States when you see this. Go ahead. Yeah.
All right, Rachel, you know, Ryan just came up with an interesting theory, and I think it can work with mine as well, is that there was a plan A. Russia would, with sanctions, would destroy the country. All the arms that NATO would give Ukraine would solve their problem. But it didn't work. Now, the plan B, because you brought it up, is that, you know, we'll take European markets, we'll make sure get more arms sales, because all these countries are going to spend more money on arms. And, you know, we kind of walk away. We didn't get everything we wanted. But we did get a strategic advantage of having Europe completely under the thumb of the United States. A lot of people in the U.S. will be happy with that outcome. Rachel.
Well, German business associations are ringing the alarm right now over the fact that businesses are moving, like industrial businesses, notably in Germany, but also from other European countries, are moving to the United States. Why? Because Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which is supposed to be a climate change act, but it's really just disguised protectionism, it basically gives breaks to green companies, of which Germany has many because it kind of banked its whole economy on all that before it decided to, you know, cut itself off from gas and ultimately realized it didn't work. But, I mean, Germany has a lot of green businesses, and what they don't have right now is very much energy. I mean, like I said, I was in Germany recently, and I decided to go for a swim at a private pool, and good luck trying to find a public pool near the French border that was even open because energy costs are so high. But I mean, I had to swim in a freezing cold pool because even private business that charges 23 euros for an entry didn't really want to heat the pool that much. So, I mean, that gives you just a taste. I wasn't even there for very long, but already I had a taste for how bad things are. Now, imagine if you're a German industry and you're having to use just a massive amount of energy to produce things. Well, what are you going to do when you're strapped for energy because your country basically cut off its own energy supply? Are you going to stick around to see how bad things get? Or are you going to be seduced by this offer of, you know, lots of energy and tax breaks over in the U.S.? Well, guess what they're choosing?
Rachel, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is, you know, it's really amazing. I mean, this is what America does to its friends, okay? What do you think it does to its enemies? It's extraordinary here. You know, but see, Ryan, the amazing outcome about this is that this really is, it seems to me that we have de facto now two globalizations going on right now. The United States has its allies in Europe. It has Japan, Australia, and then the rest is going to go to Russia and China. And there's no going back here now. I mean, the Russians, I don't see why they would rebuild that pipeline so the Americans can blow it up again. No, there's plenty of countries in Asia that want this energy. You know why? Because Germany became a very prosperous country off of cheap energy. Everybody else wants to do the same thing. The West can go its own way. And good riddance, okay, if you're blowing up pipelines like this. Go ahead, Ryan.
I completely agree. I think that the policies we're seeing, it really in a global way, but we can spearheaded by a few, U.S. government being one of them, is this, you know, ESG mindset of doing things for this kind of woke green, you know, sustainable development goal direction. But the inherent hypocrisy on it shows that they don't even care about these things at the core. I mean, you have the U.K. and the United States arguing that nuclear weapons, gas, all these things that are like the core, the crux of what environmentalists think are the problem, they're labeling as ESG compliant because, well, they use them to fight for freedom, which allows them to fight for, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, you can see how they can abstractly argue that the biggest polluters on the planet are allowed to keep doing these things. And you can see the same game being played with, you know, I mean, it's the same concept where ultimately Germany should be accepting this reality because it's better for the world standing. And that's not even the truth. Right. And so in the point about Germany and the companies going over the United States, that I think, again, the point about the foreknowledge, or rather the doing this for that exact purpose, is driving these companies there is like a byproduct. But I argue it was something that they foresaw. Right. So they're abusing their own allies. To your point, you know, think about it, what they're doing to their enemies. It's obvious they don't care about anybody. Nothing is sacred to the U.S. government, as far as I'm concerned, and the allies they work with.
Yeah, Rachel, what I mean, I'm going to ask you a question, but it's a question I've been asking for almost a year and a half. Why does Europe go along with this? Okay, impoverishment. Okay, I mean, Europe was about security and prosperity. It's about neither now.
Yeah, because everything's ideological. I mean, one right. big question is why in February of last year, 2022, was German Chancellor Olaf Scholz standing at a podium right beside Joe Biden?
Yep.
When, and this is prior to the conflict in Ukraine really going hot and popping off. But why did he just stand there when somebody in the press corps asked, you know, what would you do? What's going to happen with Nord Stream 2 if Russia goes into Ukraine? And Biden said there won't be a Nord Stream 2 and we'll make sure of that. And Olaf Scholz just stood there.
Just stood there.
And again, why? I mean, right. He just stood there like he had nothing to say. Didn't interject. Like, excuse me, what? Right? Like, you'd think that a European leader would be like, pardon me? And French President Emmanuel Macron went over to the White House last December to try to beg, which is never a good position to be in, beg the Democrats and the Republicans and the White House to please, please, please don't move forward with your climate act and your protectionist act, which risks cutting off, you know, European products from your market. And basically he was told, well, we'll see what we can do about other things, but sorry, that's just the way it's going to be.
That's the way it's going to be.
You know, and, right. and so he came home and he said, big victory. Yeah. Well, and he said, big victory. They promised to keep talking.
Okay. Well, that's how Europeans, okay. That's why in this program, we refer to him as Sergeant Scholz, not Chancellor Scholz. And I'd like to tell everybody, we lost Pepe, technical problems. We'll have him back soon. I want to thank my guests in Franklin, Paris, and in Moscow. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.